This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back Monday, a football Monday. Should mention off the top here, we are sitting 2.5. Again, it is juiced up. Seattle at the Giants tonight. 2.5 juiced up to 115 over at DraftKings with Seattle laying at 46.5 on the total as we welcome you back and close out week 4. I'm Patrick Maher live from Los Angeles, of course. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw at the D, Fremont Street in downtown Las Vegas. And we bring in longtime friend, of course, VSiN contributor and host. He is one and only Will Hill, who... his wife got a hold of him because we know it is grizzly season. It's about to get cold there in Connecticut. So he's got the beard and also he grew out the lettuce a little bit. You're looking good, my friend. How are we feeling?
Boys, what's going on? It's a great time of the year. Happy to be with you. I wish we got a little more drama this past weekend in baseball. It looked a week, 10 days ago, like we were just headed for complete madness the final weekend with the NL wildcard all bunched up. But the Marlins just somehow pulled away, kept winning one-run games. Cubs faded. That loss in Atlanta killed them. The Diamondbacks, you know, had a spot secure. So we didn't get like the crazy drama that final weekend I was kind of hoping for. The West was fun. That was a terrible job by Texas to lose 3 out of 4, especially that Thursday night game. But it's fun. It's a great time of the year. We got quadruple header Tuesday, quadruple header Wednesday, all the football sprinkled in all weekend. So really probably the best time of the year.
Let's go through these series prices really quickly as far as the postseason and baseball. And Will, we'll start with you. You were talking about potentially betting the snakes. You can give me a price because the news as we welcome you in here, the 2023 postseason, Milwaukee Brewers starting pitcher Brandon Woodruff is going to miss at least this week's wild card series against Arizona because of the right shoulder injury, which is huge for the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm tempted to take the snakes here. I mean, Milwaukee, if they were going to make a run here, and they, you know, you could make a case for them with the top three. They were going to make a run based on the Washington Nationals 2019 model of, hey, we got 3 or 4 top pitchers, and we're just going to cycle them in and out, and we're going to throw a good arm at you at all times. Without Woodruff, it's tough. Burns has been good the last month or so, but, you know, he was inconsistent early in the season. Arizona, look, I mean, you got to caveat all these series with, hey, it's the best 2 out of 3. Absolutely anything can happen, especially, you know, in baseball in such a short series. But you know, Arizona, they don't have their pitching set up, but they have the speed. They have the defense. I think the new rules really favored them where they could play small ball and steal bases and play good D. I do think Arizona's live at +160. You know, they're throwing Fott game one. That's not ideal. I mean, this is a kid that was, you know, up and down in the minors throughout the year. He pitched a little better second half of the year, much better than the first half, you know, his first go around. So I do think Arizona's live here. I think Woodruff, that's a devastating news. I was just reading the report that he had to hold back tears. You don't know what that does for the psyche of Milwaukee. And if anyone really, this benefits the Dodgers because the Dodgers get the winner of this series. And look, all these teams have pitching issues. It's amazing. So many injuries with these pitchers really throughout the league. But the Dodgers, it's going to be tough for either one of these teams to beat LA, especially if Milwaukee's down Woodruff. So I think at the price, I would take Arizona here.
Yeah, Maul, the series price, the Brewers, $1.75, as Will just mentioned, +155, +160 on the D-backs.
Yeah, I can't see justifying taking Milwaukee to -175 price, as Will alluded to. That Patrick just read off the numbers there, Will. Don't just think, as you just pointed out, too high of a price without Woodruff. But let's be real here. This is a 2 out of 3 game series. Great opportunity if you're the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sure is. Now, again, you'd like to set up your pitching a little bit. It was interesting. They were basically on the way to clinch Saturday night because the Reds were losing. I think it was like 10-0 in like the third inning. And they had Kelly about to pitch against Houston. I thought for a second they might either hold Kelly back, shorten his outing so you could save him for earlier in the series. Now you won't have Kelly till game 3. And Gowan, you know, both those guys have been much worse on the road as opposed to at home. But if you can never steal game 1 and you got Gowan game 2 to close it out, that's a ton of pressure on Milwaukee. To me, it would be Arizona or nothing for me.
Big guy, you got anything on that? And we'll get to the Rangers, by the way, +150 at the Rays, -170. But first, the D-backs with the big price.
No, look, it's still the postseason and anything can happen. And while Burns is an awesome pitcher, I'm looking for a dog to take tomorrow. I haven't really considered anyone yet, but sometimes I like finding those young teams in the postseason that can be too dumb and too young to know that they don't belong and somehow pull something off, because Arizona's offense is better than Milwaukee. So if they can somehow scrap together a run or two against what is a better pitcher in Burns, they could end up winning this one. But it's nothing official yet. I've not done my research for any of these games.
Will, you have a take on that one? The Rangers plus 150, the Rays $1.70.
Where's Texas's head at? Because, I mean, they were Thursday night, they were an out away from not clinching the division, but the magic number was about to be one. Chapman spits it up and they bring in a reliever and gives up the game-winning hit to Crawford. It's weird that the similarities, and Dustin's not going to like to hear this, the similarities between this Rangers team and the 2022 Mets are eerie, with Scherzer, with DeGrom leading the division all this time, and now you got to go through this wild card round. This is a tricky spot for Texas. They can hit, but I worry about their pitching. I mean, you're throwing Montgomery. He was a nice pitcher, but you're throwing Montgomery in game one. I don't love that bullpen. Gray's beat up now. Again, 2 out of 3, anything can happen, but I feel like Tampa can mix and match their way with the bullpen enough to get 2 out of 3. Tampa's been really good at home. I still think it's the best run differential in the league, Tampa. So it would be Tampa for me. I'm not crazy about laying the price, but I don't really have a lot of interest in Texas here.
I would agree with Will, Patrick. I don't know where the Rangers are mentally. You go into Seattle, you got to win 2 games. You don't do that. You lose 3 out of 4 over the weekend, and you lose the division, which one that you've been really leading for the last couple of months, and now you're in a wild card scenario when you should have been waiting on Saturday at home.
Yep, totally agree. Mentally, completely out of it right now. $1.50, we're showing it's up to $1.70 at some shops on Tampa Bay. You are going to lay a price with the Phillies, upwards of $2.10 on the series with the Marlins plus 180. Will,
I like Philly. I don't know how to attack it if I'm just going to go game by game. Wheeler looks cheap tomorrow at like $1.65 or so. I mean, Philly's just better around the board. I don't know if we're getting Arias in this series. Miami's limited offensively to begin with. No Alcantara, no Eury Pérez. I mean, Miami, give them credit, but you look at the run differential. It's not pretty for Miami. They scraped and crawled their way into this postseason. To me, Philly's just better around the board, and Philly's got one of the home fields that matters in baseball. That's a tough place to win. You got Wheeler, you got Noah. There's definitely a drop off after that, but it'd be hard for me to see Philly lose in this series. Of course, 2 out of 3, anything can happen. Have to mention that, but Philly to me is just the better team, the home field, the pitching, the power. I think Philly's live in this NL too. I mean, they're not afraid of anybody. They're not afraid of Atlanta. They play them tough. They're familiar with them. Beat them last year in the playoffs. So I'd be surprised if Miami's able to get 2 out of 3 here.
Okay. Anything from you boys, Marlins, Phillies?
No, I tend to agree with Will on this one. I think it's going to be tough for the Marlins with the limited production offensively. But give this team a ton of credit. Who had this team in the postseason this year? Great job by the Marlins.
In game one, I do like that under 7.5. Wheeler's on the bump. It's why you pay him. It's to come in and pitch these postseason games and shut down teams that just don't have the firepower to hang with them. And the other side, Lizardo had a really good year. I could see that being a 2-0 game, 3-0 game, 3-1 at the worst. Like under 7.5 in the postseason feels right.
Okay. Postseason, of course, underway. Major League Baseball tomorrow. Will Hill joins us right now. Sharp Money. Let's go to last night. I know you were excited because Tay-Tay was in the house, but aside from that, MetLife, Mahomes and the Chiefs. Mahomes was gross in the game. And then conversely, you had Wilson all of a sudden showing a little bit of promise. I think people are going overboard by jockeying Wilson. What was your takeaway there? Of course, Chiefs backers, Will, were bitter when Mahomes slid. It was the right play. 23-20 winner for the Chiefs.
Yeah, how about the fact that you can get the ball back with 7.5 minutes left, half the quarter left, in plus territory, and you don't score and you don't give the ball back? Threading that needle is obviously not impossible, but close to impossible. I mean, what odds would you need on that sequence to occur? Just incredible how that was able to unfold like that. Look, man, I mean, at 17-0, this is what's just so crazy about the NFL, and we're all sort of crazy for betting it. At 17-0, imagine, you know, watching the game with someone and telling them, hey, an hour from now, this is going to be 20-all. It's just, there's no rhyme or reason sometimes. I thought, you know, both teams could be upset about the whistle. You go down that rabbit hole with the refs and you're going to be there all day. But I didn't think it should have been a safety because that wasn't in the end zone. And then it wasn't a horse collar that set up the Jets touchdown. So then the Chiefs got some ticky-tack calls late. I just think the Chiefs, this is what they do. They don't cover these big numbers. They take care of business. Like you said, Mahomes was not good in the game at all, but he finds a way. They find a way. The Chiefs are much better on defense than they've been. If the Chiefs are going to have a top 5 or top 7 defense, we can all go home. They're probably The rightful favorite to win it. So at least you saw something out of Wilson. I mean, it's just so depressing for the Jets. They were, I think, a legit title contender with Rodgers, at least like an AFC title contender, get to the Final Four, that kind of thing. Without him, it's just whether you stick with Wilson, whether you go on trade for a Brissett or a Tannehill, this team is, you know, a seven seed probably at best. So sort of depressing for the Jets, and the Chiefs take care of business.
Yeah, Patrick, great point there by Will. This Jets team, excuse me, the Chiefs team has given up 60 points so far this year. The San Francisco 49ers have given up 58 points. So this team defensively is really presenting some challenges so far.
Spagnuolo's defenses always do this year in, year out. They start slowly and then they start to progress as the year progresses. So while I totally agree with Will, it's a 3-1 Chiefs team that went there, took care of business. The moral lapse around MetLife by the Jets fans is hilarious. They're sitting 1-3. You got to win that football game. Okay. Are you feeling, let me ask you this. Prior to Minnesota's win in Carolina, which isn't a shock, they were favored. Where were you on the Cousins discussion? Were you looking, and for those that don't know, Will is a Vikings fan. Were you prepared to move on?
Totally prepared. He's not a bad player, but he could help other teams more, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's the Jets. It's, look, we're in year six of this. It just doesn't work. Paying a guy like Cousins that kind of money with a middling defense, you just need everything to be perfect around it. I'm ready to just, you know, get a younger quarterback and they're not going to probably be good enough to get a top five pick or bad enough to get a top five pick, but I'm absolutely ready to move on. He could certainly help Atlanta. You watch Atlanta, not a Ritter fan. He could help that team, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. Don't go anywhere. Cause when we come back, we want to get your play on Monday Night Football with the Seahawks laying 2.5, 46.5 on the total. Will Hill, VSiN host contributor, also Bear Bets podcast and Gold Boy Bets as well at not the Will Hill on Twitter. We're coming back with Will Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the VSiN 2023 NHL betting guide is out. The NHL season is almost here, and our hockey betting guide experts are ready for all the action. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NHL betting guide. It features previews for all 32 teams, future bets, award picks, and, of course, season-long props, first period betting strategies, Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, plus best bet articles 5 days a week once the season starts. The guide is a must-have with key insights and data for both avid hockey bettors and those new to the sport. Give yourself an edge this season with the VSiN NHL betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. I was just laughing, thinking about Gary Bettman and his squad getting together. Okay, we got to attack the NFL. Here's what I'm thinking. This is a rough time to start your NHL season, okay? Because, I mean, you've got the Swifties hanging out in the boxes at MetLife with Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively. And then you've got a product that if you look at the top 30 viewed across any metric, the top 30 viewed shows of the year, it's always going to be an NFL game. And here comes the NBA with a big trade over the weekend that did it make a sound if Drew Holiday gets traded during a college football Saturday? I'm not sure. And here comes the NHL. But here's one thing I can promise you. There's money to be made in the NHL. Amal Shaw is a big NHL bettor. So make sure you go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. We welcome you back. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This is Sharp Money. I'm Patrick Maher. The boys, of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. So I mentioned, and yes, we are going to get to Tennessee coming up in just a bit. That's one of the teams that has a decision to make at quarterback, not just this year, but moving forward into next year. We started with the Jets. Okay, a little bit of a cheat because of the injury to Rodgers, but of course they do have a decision to make eventually with Zach Wilson. Let's move on to the next team, fellas, and that is the Patriots. So the Patriots got beat down 38-3 yesterday. And we've got Like, Love, Loathe coming up on the show. Maybe the Patriots are involved on a Football Monday here on Sharp Money. But that's the biggest blowout of Belichick's career, 38-3. This is the third straight year the Patriots has started 1-3, fellas. It was ugly. You know, again, Mac Jones, 150 yards. He was pulled for Bailey Zappi. They were scoreless on their final 10 drives of the game. Just an inept, listless, spiritless effort from the Patriots on the road at the Cowboys. And we'll get started with not just the game in general. You see a closed Dallas 6, obviously an easy cover, stays under the 43, Amal Shaw. Let's start with the game, and then we'll get to Mac Jones and his future.
Yeah, Dallas dominant. Look, coming off of a rough loss in Arizona, great bounce back spot for them. You know, I played the under in this game, but looking back on it, I should have just played the Dallas Cowboys. Less than a touchdown at home against a New England team that's got a ton of question marks when you realistically look at it. They scored 13 points. I'm not going to give them credit for the safety. That was the defensive play against the Jets. Against Philadelphia, they put up 20 points. Against Miami, they put up 17 points. So there's something that's not hitting its stride on the offensive side of the football. I think it's something to take into consideration when you look at the New England Patriots. So to me right now, this team's got a lot of question marks. You mentioned it. It starts and ends with Mac Jones. It's just the inconsistency, three turnovers yesterday. And Patrick, I tell you what, the more and more you watch him, it just is evident there's a lack of confidence in the ability to push the ball down the field unless somebody's completely wide open.
I totally agree. The confidence is a great word to kind of frame Mac Jones, because it's not crazy as far as the arm talent, but he's dealt with different systems. We've gone over the fact that he had a defensive coordinator running the offense last year. Bill O'Brien can run an offense, so that's not an issue this year, unless you want to blame a new scheme. But just quickly on the Cowboys, that was a big bounce back after a loss to the Cardinals where they just did not look themselves. The defense, which was bad against the Cardinals, big guy scored two touchdowns. Dak with a pair of scores. They ran for 124 yards and a touchdown. So again, the Patriots' strength coming into the year was the defense, and the Cowboys, that legitimately was maybe their best performance of the year just because of the teeth they showed against a pretty good defense.
Yeah, and I know they lost, you know, a week ago to Arizona, but is there a chance this Dallas team could potentially be better than what we're seeing from Philadelphia right now in the NFC East, and maybe in the NFC be that number two team right behind San Francisco? We're going to find out here shortly. But I love this Cowboys team. I love the defense, and I think they're a team that's going to get better as the year goes on.
The quarterback question. My assumption is they're already starting to grind. I think there are questions, obviously. I know you're not a huge Belichick guy. Obviously, Amal, the conversation surrounding he and Tom Brady will be one that is perpetual, obviously, in NFL circles. But there does seem to be the message isn't getting across. When the Cowboys are dropping 38 on you, and I know it's a couple of defensive scores, but that didn't look like an overly motivated Patriots team, and they obviously have to start figuring out what they're going to do at quarterback. This is year three for Mac. A decision will be made, and we're going to make the decision today as we're doing on Sharp Money. The decision will be made to move on.
I would agree with you completely. Look, even when he had a good season as a rookie, I still think he had a ceiling that was pretty low. It wasn't where you sit there and go, wow, this guy's got potential upside. You still needed players and pieces around him to build good offensive line, good running game, and solid to good receivers. You know, Kansas City's taken an approach. We have Patrick Mahomes. We can basically run anybody out there, and that's one of the reasons they didn't re-sign Tyreek Hill and traded him to Miami. And with Mac Jones right now, I think it's a situation where if you're New England, and I know Belichick won't dump the season, but man, you've got some quarterbacks coming up in the draft you've got to really start looking towards, because the reality of it is, Mac Jones, to me, in a great season feels like 10-7. In a bad season feels like 5-12. And generally speaking, is going to be somewhere in that 7 to 10, 9-8 type of season as things go, depending on the defense.
Is Mac Jones a guy, fellas, that if he was in the right system, a la the 49ers, who originally it was posited they were going to draft him, is he a guy that would be serviceable, a.k.a. Jimmy Garoppolo, get you to a Super Bowl, miss out on one long pass, potentially winning a Super Bowl? Or is he a guy that's not one of the best 32 on the planet?
He can be argued that he's one of the best 32, but I love the Jimmy Garoppolo comparison, and there's nobody who was more anti-Jimmy, and probably because of what he was being paid, but I don't think Mac Jones is in that same caliber. I think there's still a lot of plays that Jimmy Garoppolo makes that he deserves a ton of credit for. I just don't think Mac Jones can make them. When I look at him, he's a guy that he doesn't throw guys open necessarily, but more importantly, it just doesn't seem to have the moxie you want out of a quarterback. You know, Garoppolo, at least the teammates seem to respect and like him. I think there's some positives you take away with him. But when I see Mac Jones, I'm just like, man, if he didn't play at Alabama, we'd all be saying, who the hell is this guy?
Well, and I think that the Alabama thing is the best point about him, because I think he's kind of a cautionary tale of – there's other quarterbacks who've been similar in the past, but he's a cautionary tale for when you're evaluating a quarterback who comes from a team filled with NFL talent, especially on the outside, the way Mac Jones had to work with at Alabama, that there's a chance he's not the guy you think he is as a passer. Now, he probably has the ability to break down film and make reads at the line. He's probably solid and all of that. But talent-wise, there's nothing special about his skills as a quarterback, especially in today's NFL. He's not athletic. He's not mobile. He can't move around out there. He doesn't have a massive arm. He's decently accurate. But there's just nothing special about him. Maybe in the right system, but like, I still think there's a massive or really low ceiling on whatever team he goes to.
I got a special guy for you. It's not going to surprise the two of you, but I think if you're just tuning into Sharp Money, you're going to be like, whoa, you think that highly of this player coming up for this team next year? That's a little bit of a tease. We'll get to him coming up in just a bit. Will the Patriots have a new starter at a quarterback next year? The answer is absolutely yes. Yeah.
Well,
year three, Mac Jones, this will be it. The Patriots will be starting a new quarterback. Yes or no?
Absolutely. And here's the other thing you have to look at, and it applies in the AFC South as well to Tennessee, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. But if you are the New England Patriots and you look around, you see Josh Allen, you see Tua, and you see potentially Rodgers, are you really going to beat those teams with Mac Jones as your starting quarterback in six games a year?
No, sir. No, and the guy you were chomping. Go ahead.
It's similar to like the AFC West. You're going to win the AFC West, not be able to go shot for shot with Patrick Mahomes. You got to look around and you need a different type of weapon. Is it Bailey Zappe? Because there was questions because Mac Jones got pulled from the game. Here was Bill Belichick talking about replacing Jones with Zappe yesterday.
I don't think there was any point leaving him in the game.
And will he be starting next week against the Saints?
Yeah, just so there's no point leaving him in the game, Mike.
In that sense, I mean, do you think consider taking like Judon out on the other side, or you know, like at that point?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could put somebody out there.
Okay, so just one thing, and then we're going to come back. No. You just mentioned the Titans.
No,
okay, you can pull that down. I think they say SOS when you send for help. You say SOS. Yeah. For Bill Belichick, SSRI, send meds. Okay? That's an unhappy human. All I'm saying is raise the serotonin. It might be able to level off the unhappiness. Like, what is that? What are we even participating in? It's called life. Cheer up, bro. It's been worse. Not for the Titans at quarterback and not for the Atlanta Falcons. Am I right?
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, win bigger by betting smarter this NFL season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and soccer bet with historical data and trends. Stop betting in the dark. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit HOFBets.com and use the code WINNER to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning at Hall of Fame Bets right now. Okay, we welcome you back on a Monday, Football Monday. Of course, you've got Monday Night Football, MetLife, the Giants right now catching 2.5 with the Seahawks, whose offense scored 37 against Carolina, and preceding that, scored 37 against the Detroit Lions. Looks better now with the Lions playing very well defensively. You've got a total of 47, 46.5-ish on the Monday Night Affair coming up tonight. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. Got a little bit of a theme, as we generally do here on Sharp Money on a Monday, and that is quarterback questions, uncertainty at the most important position. I've got 10 teams I'm highlighting. It's not just today, but it's going into next year. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. Let's get back to it. So far, the Jets, we all agree Wilson's not the answer. We agree Mac Jones isn't the answer. Let's go to London. The Falcons, a loser, of course, against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll get into the ramifications as far as the betting, but quickly, Desmond Ridder. That is the question, because if you think about it, he threw for 72 yards, two picks in the first half. Ridder took Atlanta out of the game. You've got a 2-2 Falcons team, of course, to have to consider Taylor Heinicke at this point, because hopes of making the postseason relies. If you think about what happened after a couple of drives, that defense for the Falcons settled down, played actually very well against a Jaguar team that still trying to find its way, but a 23-7 loser, 3.5 on the closing number. Obviously the Jags cover. The question about Ridder and the question about quarterback next year for the Falcons, I think, unequivocally we'll all say they're going to have to move on, and Ridder is not the answer, Amal.
I would agree with you completely, and you've mentioned it all along. You said it before the season started. At what point does Taylor Heinicke get the opportunity? And I think it's got to come sooner rather than later. Look, I can tell you right now, I heard somewhere this morning somebody was suggesting Justin Fields to the Atlanta Falcons, and I know Falcons fans are like, hey, he's not an improvement. The reality of it is his mobility alone, and he's just got to make a few plays that will improve this offense. Drake London, it already appears to be at his wit's end. You've got an absolute bona fide superstar in the making in Bijan Robinson. We know what Kyle Pitts is. This team's got some talent. Arthur Smith, I don't know where you guys rank him, guys. Top three, top five play caller in the National Football League? He doesn't have the same talent. He doesn't have Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua. He doesn't have Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, and all these guys. Purdy missed one pass yesterday. So to me, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, you're in a division that's very salvageable. You're sitting at 2-2. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 3-1. Great opportunity to still make some headway and get towards the postseason this year.
You mentioned Drake London. The Riddler, Spencer, I keep on calling him the Riddler. Desmond Ridder, 19 of 31, 191, a touchdown, two picks. I'm sure everybody saw floating all over social. He went to dap up Mac Hollins at some point during the game, and Mac Hollins completely ignored him. So not great vibes from your supposed leader in the quarterback position. I know where you stand, but go ahead and enforce it. Desmond Ridder, the Falcons will move on, big guy.
Well, I mean, it's tough for put yourself in Mac Hollins' shoes, right? Every year in the NFL, you're judged off what you've accomplished. Really tough to catch balls that don't make it to you. It's a big issue for a guy like him. And by the way, Mac Hollins is a big target. For you to miss him, you really got to be inaccurate. It's look, it's a long build, and maybe part of the build for Atlanta is knowing that Desmond Ridder's not the guy. You throw him out there to confirm he's not the guy, and in doing so, you end up with a draft pick where you can get a true franchise quarterback coming up in this next draft. And as you guys talked about, I mean, Arthur Smith, he is as good and creative a play caller as we have in the NFL right now. He's not from the McVay and Shanahan tree. He's kind of his own thing, but he certainly knows how to dial up an offense and get guys the ball and let them make plays. That, did you see the play Bijan made yesterday, one-on-one with a guy, and just juked him 4 million times till the guy hit the turf and ran up the field? Like, they have dangerous players on this offense, and you got a guy at quarterback who led a team that no one saw making the postseason a few years ago in Taylor Heinicke. You might as well just turn it over to him. You figure a guy like Smith can rein in some of the risks that Heinicke likes to take with the ball and put him in his system. There's no way he's not more successful than Desmond Ridder.
Fair enough. So that's another answer at the quarterback position for next year. Atlanta, new signal caller. Next up, how about Tennessee? So this one's interesting because Tannehill, who's 35 years old, the answer's already done. All right. He is on the final year of a 4-year deal. The Tennessee Titans will have a new signal caller next year. The question is, do they want who's left on the roster? Will Levis, we'll get to. Of course, Malik Willis, a 27-3 winner over the Bengals. We talked incessantly about the spot the Bengals were in with a banged up Joe Burrow who does not look himself. Short week. You come to the Titans, and the Titans dominated this matchup. Tannehill, the quarterback situation is the question, but how about that division? You look at the AFC South right now, everybody is 2-2, so it's there for the Titans to take. The question is, 18 of 25, 240, a touchdown, a pick, 11 rush yards for Tannehill. I don't know if there's really a question here. We can just also all admit Tannehill's going to be moving on. Where he ends up, we don't know. But the question is, does the Titans roster right now hold the future for next year, Amal Shaw?
No, it does not. Great question by you. And when you look around that division, you've got Anthony Richardson. What was he, the fifth pick in the draft? And then you've got, of course, C.J. Stroud in Houston and Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. You're going to need to go get a quarterback. If you're looking at a long-term stock, the AFC South is it with this quarterback play. And if you're Nashville Titans, right now they don't have that quarterback on the roster. It's not Malik Willis. It's not Will Levis. I think this team's going to have to go into the draft. And Mike Vrabel is a guy who won 3 Super Bowls as a player. I think he knows what it takes for a quarterback, whether it doesn't have to be a Tom Brady type, but he knows he needs somebody that can help put some pressure on these defenses. They're too reliant on Derrick Henry and what he can do. By the way, one quick complaint about Lou Amarillo. Did you not know Derrick Henry was going to throw the halfback pass when there's 10 seconds remaining and they have no timeouts remaining?
Absolutely. That was a gross game. Every time I checked in on that one, it wasn't aesthetically pleasing. However, the quarterback position, when you draft Willis and then you come back and you draft Will Levis, the question is, what do you have there at quarterback, big guy?
Yeah, I think the concern for Tennessee, though, is that there's not a lot of weapons on that offense on the outside, right? That DeAndre Hopkins is there and they're using him a ton to move the chains on third down right now. But they don't have a lot of dynamic playmakers outside of Derrick Henry on offense. So it's like, I think they're just squeezing whatever is left out of this run with Tannehill, Henry, and company. And we could potentially be on the verge of a full offensive rebuild maybe next year, maybe the year after. They're just trying to see what is left in the tank here because, let's be real, Derrick Henry's got a lot of miles on him. He's still going, but at some point he's going to need to go in the shop and get a quick fix or tune-up because that guy's been carrying the load for a long time. So with them, I could see Tannehill being back on like a one-year deal, one last run type thing if they don't get the quarterback of the future they want and they think they can contend. But it's almost over for this kind of group in Tennessee.
Look, I'm not a Tannehill guy, never have been. He couldn't beat out Gerard Johnson, at quarterback at Texas A&M. The reality of it is, though, if you were Atlanta, a guy like Tannehill, somewhere
that's between enough. Yeah.
15 to 20 is enough. Patrick, I just keep bringing up Atlanta because we talked about Ritter, but also to me, that team's got some talent. We've seen Houston, we all wrote them off in the first 6 quarters of football, and then all of a sudden C.J. Stroud found his confidence in the second half against Indianapolis, and this team's been playing great football for the last 10 quarters. And then you look at this Atlanta team and Tennessee, who's probably not going too far in this competitive AFC, but man, Atlanta, I get there are 4 teams in the top of the NFC. But if you go get a quarterback, your offense can create some real problems for opponents.
Well, and also,
I think Dustin's favorite rapper, Macklemore, said it best. One man's trash is another man's treasure. If Tannehill was with the Falcons, big guy, not bad.
Well, he would also make sense because he had his best years when Arthur Smith was calling plays for him. It makes a ton of sense, and you don't need him to do that much. Like, his limited abilities, although I got to tell you, that arm looks a lot different than it did when he was playing with Arthur Smith. I don't know if he could throw the ball 50 yards in the air right now.
Patrick, it's like me on this show. You guys just need me to be present. Dustin's going to snap the ball. You're going to call the plays. We're going to run it. I just need to run the route. I mean, come on, man. That's all I'm asking. Tannehill, just show up. Get him to Atlanta. It's not that far from Nashville.
I'm way too athletic to be wasted as a center.
Well, all I know is this. The Bengals are a freaking mess. You saw Ja'Marr Chase after the game. He's like, I'm always effing open. Yeah. It's time to rest Burrow. He can't drive the ball down the field. Cincinnati's got 3 offensive touchdowns in 4 weeks. Burrow has been about as bad as it gets, which I never saw this coming because I think coming into the year, I would have said, maybe I'll take him 1 overall just based on what he's accomplished, but they're in major trouble. I don't know how they get out of this hole sitting 1-3. Of course, in that brutal division. Okay, so we all agree. The Titans will have a new signal caller next year. Up next, the Washington Commanders. Will they have a new quarterback next year? And also, how about Chicago? We continue. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, as we welcome you back Monday Night Football tonight, right now, the number. Hope you had a nice weekend. I'm Patrick Maher. The number 2.5, Seattle's laying it, 46.5 on the total. We'll have plenty to get to. I've got a prop that I love coming up tonight, a receiving prop, as we welcome you back. So we'll get to the conclusion of week 4 with Seattle at New York in Jersey. MetLife coming up in just a bit. Dustin Swedelson, Amal Shaw back downtown at the D. I kind of a little theme running through today's show has been quarterback questions. You got about a third of the league. I got 10 teams that have questions, not just right now, but moving forward. We're almost done with those teams. We've got three more to go. We've got Like, Love, Loathe coming up from the boys in just a little bit. Mark Malusis is going to join from New York City talking about the Giants. And also our buddy Will Hill will join us as well. We were having the conversation right before we were getting off one of those quarterback questions, Sam Howell and the Commanders. The three of us agreed that he's done enough to earn at 23 years old with a bad offensive front. He's probably done enough, Sam Howell, to earn another opportunity next year unless something completely falls apart. But we heard from Ron Rivera. So on the road, big dogs, what was the number yesterday? Did it close 8.5? Somewhere right around there with Philadelphia laying it. So Philly, an 8.5-point favorite. So the Commanders, huge dogs. They get a touchdown drive as time expired from essentially a rookie quarterback. They played great. They outgained a great running team in Philly on the ground there at home in Philly. So here's the question for Ron Rivera. Time has expired. You scored with the beautiful throw to Jahan Dotson from Howell, and you have a question. You have a decision to make. Do you tie it up at 31 and force overtime, or do you go for the two-point conversion? That is the question I pose to you. We know conversion rates, you know, an 18 and 19 combined, two-point conversion rate in the league was right around 49.4. There's variance of about 4%. You go 49 up to 52. We'll call it 50-50 on the two-point conversion rate in the NFL. So if you know you've got a 50-50 shot on the road, a chance to win it. Now, Amal Shaw, just to clear up some confusion, the Rivera cut, he was talking about his team, you know, that two-minute drive to tie it up or the two-minute drive to potentially tie it up with a field goal. He felt like his offense was gassed at that point. Give him a little bit of a blow going into overtime. That's the reason Rivera said he didn't kick it. What do you do there? Potentially a winner, walk-off on the road, or do you kick it and go to overtime?
Well, you know, I said I didn't have a problem with the decision. You know, really just gut feel. At 2 yards, do you think he can get it? The way the offense was humming, they had that momentum after they get the touchdown on the last play of the game. A lot of things point and advocate for going for it. One other thing on the other side you got to remember, you got Jake Elliott. You get that ball, and it's late in the game. Within the 47, 45-yard line, 62, 64 yards is not out of question for Jake Elliott. He's been tremendous for this team. Nick Sirianni has complete confidence in him, so that's a factor you have to take into consideration. Patrick, I'm not trying to be evasive to your question. I can live with the result. I don't know. To me, it's just a gut feel. I don't feel like they were so outclassed where it's, let's say, for example, the Chicago Bears are playing Philly and they got the game tied. I'm like, you got to go for it. You're probably not going to be able to win the football game in overtime. I felt Washington was with Philly step for step yesterday.
Yeah. I think being evasive here is okay. Maybe Dustin, we can text Fezzik, who's had bronchitis, isn't going to join us today, but obviously a big math guy. Maybe he can, from his actuary mind, can tell us what the math says. I mean, to your point, Amal, as far as it also comes down to temperament, you're just your personality. Are you a conservative coach? Are you a coach that likes to take risks? Because if we think of probability and that perspective, you think it's a 50-50, you know, 49 to 52 as far as probability of converting on the 2-point. Then to go to overtime, you've got a 50-50 coin toss. Yeah. Now, the overtime rules does give you an opportunity unless you lose the coin toss and the other team scores. So you get into a bunch of expanded probability there. I think on the road in that situation, I'm going for it, Dustin, but I don't think you can kill Rivera for kicking it there.
I think the place Amal and I are sitting are the reason why you go for it. You sit down at a table and you got a hot dealer or someone's hot with the dice and craps. Yep. That offense was rolling. And I think at that point, you put the trust in the fact that things are going right. You figured something out. The defense is on their heels. You're not expected to win this game. Why give them a second to get caught up and kind of catch themselves, not just catch their breath, but catch themselves and readjust their game plan for you, which is what they were able to do. Go for it. Go for the kill. I don't think he gets hammered if he goes for it and they don't get it, because he's trying to instill a different culture into a young team that's trying to take the next step. And that's the team in your division you're trying to knock down.
I agree with Dustin in a sense he doesn't get destroyed for going for it if they don't make it. But I think it's a lot of Monday morning quarterback in that situation. If they make it, do you sit there and say, we don't have enough confidence in our team to be able to beat Philadelphia in an overtime situation? And if you win and you are successful in the two-pointer, wow, what great confidence he has in this offense and this team. So I think the script would have been written based on the result of the two-point attempt.
Rivera gets crushed if he goes for it and doesn't get it. Rivera gets crushed regardless because he's a bit of a donk, but he would have gotten crushed. Bieniemy, he's got to go to Bieniemy and say, I need a guarantee. Every offensive coordinator's got a 2-point just off to the right of their sheet that says this is break glass in case of use type of play that you call in that situation. Like, we haven't shown this to anybody, and this is exactly what we're going to run in this situation. Bieniemy's got to be tackling the head coach, ready to go for it there. Again, it's whether or not you're conservative, whether or not you're progressive or aggressive in that situation, Rivera decides to kick it. Okay, let me just do this because we've got three more, and I'll just give you the teams. Chicago, Fields played his best game probably as a pro. Tampa Bay sitting in first place with Baker Mayfield, former number one overall pick at 28 years old. And then, you know, I kind of threw Minnesota with the Cousins decision. Minnesota's going to move on from the quarterback, so I don't know if there's much of a decision there. Cousins is on a one-year deal. And then Denver with Russell Wilson. That's also interesting as far as uncertainty at the position. But let's go to Chicago. Chicago, Fields, his best game I mentioned as a pro, 28 of 35. What were they up? 21 points, yep. Kind of end of the third quarter. They end up losing this matchup to the Denver Broncos, but four touchdowns, you know, a great ball. I'm thinking of that great ball to DJ Moore that he threw in the corner of the end zone, but another loser for the 0-4 Bears, 31 to 28, a push on the three, goes well over the 47, but the theme is, do the Bears have their quarterback of the future? That's a question that we could ask every single week about Fields, but he played great yesterday, Amal.
Yeah, I don't feel like the loss is on him. The fumble, the sack fumble, I got to tell you, somebody's got to pick up the blindside blitz. I mean, holy cow, before he even takes a step back, they're in his face, and then Jonathan Cooper with the scoop and score. For me, I look at this team defensively. They're still a bad, bad football team. And on last play, the interception to Cole Kmet, I thought it was one where Kmet could, it was just a miscommunication. It looked like Kmet was going left and Fields threw the ball going towards his right. So I don't know, guys. It's a tough call. I still think Fields has enough upside that if you roll the dice and if you make a quarterback change, unless it's Caleb Williams, I mean, it doesn't, as great as Caleb Williams has been at USC and Drake May is at North Carolina, how many quarterbacks have we seen come into the draft? Trey Lance. I mean, this guy's already been drafted and moved on from by the San Francisco 49ers. So no guarantees there. I still think the potential is there. You look at it with Moore, Kmet. By the way, you mentioned it last week, Patrick. Who the hell made the decision to let their running game go? Who's the kid with Detroit right now?
Montgomery.
I when they made that in the offseason, I was like, are we watching the same tape?
And they had cap space.
Yes. I didn't understand that at all. So I don't know. I think the Bears got to improve on the offensive line, but defensively, they got to get a lot better as well.
I think the answer is easy for this team. And Dustin, I'll let you take it from here. But the answer is obviously you go with Fields for another year, but you're going to wipe out Eberflus. You're going to wipe out the coaching staff. You had an issue with the defensive coordinator. We can get to Eberflus's comments. 4th-and-1 at the Denver 18, tied up. He decides to go for it. Out of the shotgun, Herbert gets stuffed. So to me, that was not necessarily a great play call. We can argue whether or not Eberflus should be going for it, but the question is the quarterback.
Yep. Let's hear from Eberflus first, then we'll get into Fields. This is what the head coach of the Bears said about that 4th-and-1 call yesterday.
I love the way our offense was running the ball at that time, and we had a really good chance to seal the deal right there. And that was the decision we made at that moment. And again, the response for our defense there. So they end up getting a chunk play. After that, and our defense did a good job of rising up to the occasion, making it third and long, and then we forced the field goal, and then we had the ball back there with some time to go ahead and at least tie or win the game.
Mm. Yeah, it's time to move on. I mean, that guy is not
bad.
That's a tough clip. He's obviously frazzled, but that's a defensive guy whose defense is playing a he didn't trust his defense, really, because if you kick the field goal there, you put your defense in a spot where they can win a football game for you, boys.
I still believe in Justin Fields' talent, and I think he could end up being a cautionary tale in the NFL, where if you're not put in the right system and the right coaches are around you, you don't have a chance to get it right. Like, everything you saw with him playing natural yesterday and the game was just flowing and coming to him, that is everything he can be. Maybe not every single week, but nobody's like that. There is a skill set there that is so unique. He is so athletic, but his arm is so good, and he's so quick to make reads. I think there's a way to capitalize on his abilities. It's just not going to happen with this coaching staff in Chicago, and they need to get an offensive guy in there.
By the way, has there been a worse franchise for, I don't know, four decades at developing quarterbacks?
They're the worst.
Right.
We're still looking since Jim McMahon.
Kyle Orton's like a top five quarterback for them.
Okay, boys, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, and Denver. And then we'll get to like, love, loathe as we continue. Sharp Money.